This is Melting Titanium number 20, recorded August 25th, 2009. Okay.
So the new-sightedness, the experience of that is that the stars are in your eyes, in your rods and cones, and your rods and cones can manipulate the sky and its contents.
Because what you're seeing that is your momentary moment of now is actually a photograph of a very, very, very old star. Because by the time the vibration of that light wave gets to your eye, your rod and cone, it's old news. That star could be disappeared by the time it reached your sightedness.
But your immediate environment, not the sky and the starlight, but your clouds and blue, that's not a photograph. That's right here now, isn't it?
Well, but it changes, and it still has to be the refraction of that light. And yes, if it is closer, then yes, you can actually see it move more so than you would see the stars moving.
So the motion indicates an approximation of the present.
How does gravity affect light?
All right, so let's go into gravity. I recall somebody said, with some kind of cultural authority, doesn't it bend light?
Gravity bends light.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not sure.
We don't know either, because it seems to be the catchword of the day, and it doesn't seem to have anything to do with anything that we're talking about, except we'll embrace it and take you to a new place. But first of all, let's start off with some questions. This is interesting, because you're starting right out of the chute, beginning of this particular time, that we have to share together. There's some questions that are coming, and this has to do with the Himalaya mountain range, or the Himalayas.
This is not an image Ion's picking up. You're picking up an auditory question you can hear.
Yes.
And what's the question?
The question is that the amount of gained snowfall on the peaks of the Himalayas is vastly less than it normally is, specifically this time of year.
Okay.
Their name is Ipsoc.
I-P-S-O-C-H, Ipsoc?
Yeah, Ipsoc. Ipsoc.
S-O-C-H.
Fine.
Okay.
That's close enough.
And where is Ipsoc?
In the foothills of the Himalayas. And the question is, there's less visible ice and snow on the camps of the Himalayas. And the question is, why? And the answer is, the amount of precipitation has been in a changing capacity. And that change is showing up from your eye's view as a melting away of what was always white-capped mountains. The coldness is the same, but the amount of precipitation has decreased. And you've also noticed that within your water table, of how the streams have increased because of the melting away. But it's really not melting away because the streams aren't higher. You're coming into the season now when it should be back to cold. And it's actually not necessarily so cool. It is cooler. You're starting to notice the change in the climate, but you're noticing less and less and less rain.
Are you talking about where this person, Ipsoc, is?
Yeah.
Yeah, where they are.
To that particular question. It's not global warming or heating or anything like that. It's just there's less moisture.
And you said the precipitation is less?
Yes.
What did that mean?
That's why there's less snow on the mountaintops.
Okay, so just less rain. But then you talked about the river.
If it was warming, the melting snow would cause the rivers and the streams at the base of the mountain to be elevated,
to
more water in them.
Yeah.
But they're not.
So one can say there's no water, and the reason there's no water is because there's less snow, and there's less snow because there's less rain.
Less precipitation.
Okay, well, that answers that one.
It's a very good question. And if you notice the way the different mountains, you'll start noticing more rocky crags,
So the mountainscapes will look more craggy?
Yes. The rocks will be exposed. To see for 1,000 years they've been ice-covered and never thawed.
So here's someone who sent in the question, just wanted to get their question and didn't care about the topic, just said, hey, they're on, I can get my question answered.
That's exactly correct. They went into it and how they did it, if you're wondering. They had a focused wanting, and they demanded an audience forcing non-physical to respond to their place in their reality. And they wanted an answer, which they've gotten, from the place of understanding how to prepare their next logical steps or fastest path to their joy of whether to pick up more livestock to feed or to get rid of less than, to balance whether to increase or decrease, or which way to start manipulating the grasses and the seeds and the plantings. They don't do a lot of farming, but they do a tremendous amount of grazing. And if grazing is going to be less, that's not the time to be adding more to your herd.
So the answer encourages him to do what?
Not buy the extra livestock that is a super good price right now.
Right, and that would in other times be good to buy it, but not now. No, not buy the livestock, and because
the grass, the food source is going to be less than.
Food will be less, less rain.
Less rain, less grass, less seeds, less production, less things for the beast to eat.
So that's great. Do we want to get on to the topic, or are you getting more questions?
No, that was the activation zone. But we don't know. We're just kind of flowing with it. Barbara.
The activation zone, but are we going to do gravity, or are we
going to... We're going to do gravity, but Barbara, we're sorry.
Okay.
They're running you down. The lights, the keyboard's lit up, so you either want to take the call or turn off the board. It's your call.
Okay, Barbara, we'll take the call.
Barbara Johnston in Hoboken, New Jersey, has a question about, this is questions, these are specific, not just pictures, she calls it a rat terrier. I guess that's a dog. Her rat terrier hair is falling off. It's losing the follicles of its hair. And it's not an old dog, and she doesn't know what the problem is. And the problem is, has nothing to do with the allergies of the dermis that she spent a fortune with the veterinarian or animal husbandry and to figure out. It has to do with the soap that she's using. She needs to change to a non-lanolin-based dog shampoo. Change that, and then you'll see a healing process within the dermis of the skin.
So the lanolin soap was causing the problem.
Right. The dog apparently has an allergy regarding it or some disconnection to it.
Yeah, and the doctor or veterinarian thought it was an allergy in the dermis.
No, they thought it was allergies like to other outside things, dirt, grasses, like an allergic reaction to outside.
Yeah, the dirty stuff, not the clean stuff, the soap.
Not the clean stuff. Yeah. The lanolin is what the dog was having the reaction to. Okay, now we can get on. There are many folks that are engaging into this gravity question that you're ready to chomp the bit at, but they've been waiting for it to sort of flow. And we don't want to just blow you with it. We want you to ask questions, and we want to answer the questions based on your asking, Bob, because you're a great host, always trying to wrap it, because if we just blast you with it, you're going to have dead space on your radio show because you may not know which way to go. But we're going to soften it from your asking. If you don't go the direction that we're getting to, you always do, but if you didn't, we may say next question. And then let you develop it, and we won't contradict. We'll answer the questions as they're asked, and that way there won't be all this distraction and confusion, because Paul in Idaho, Paul Hammond.
H-A-M-M-O-N-D.
Uh-huh.
You know what
just
part?
Just outside of Boise.
Okay.
He's noticing changes. and he wants to understand it, but he is not a geothermal physicist. So he wants straight, real deal answers from a basic understanding so he can get it to figure out what the mutation in his potato world is.
He thinks gravity has something to do with this?
He knows it does, and that's why he's tuned in. Either that or he's asked the gods to give him some type of insight.
It's affecting his potatoes. Here's what I know. When I used to talk about these physics issues with the Evergreens, they said what scientists, physicists will discover is that gravity is a multi-factor thing. It's not like up or down or unidirectional. It's many vectors. And that image has stuck with me for 15 to 20 years trying to figure out what we're going to discover. What would you say to that?
Perfect. That's exactly where to begin, because it's the beginning place. You've got several basic myths. False premises judging gravity in your reality. Actually, gravity is weakening, Bob. The gravitational pull, which you think is this major thing that affects everybody equally, it doesn't, and it's getting weaker. Gravity is less than.
It's being decentralized.
It is being decentralized, but it's also being easier to overcome.
And when I bring in the communication structures, the print era, everything was heavy, unidirectional, downward pulling, and that's enhanced the gravity as being more centralized.
You have a discussion of words and you say it has merit or much gravity. What's the gravity of the matter? But now what happens is even something as simple as a very, very small magnet of the electromagnetic field, which was very small in power, has now been engaged and become more powerful. Here's an example. Let's take a ring of keys, like a key.
Yeah.
You don't have keys. You don't even know what keys. But if you had a ring of keys, and he had a little metal ring that it was on. Remember how they used to do it with a ring of keys? You can take him, get up on a pretty tall building, hold it over the building, turn loose the keys, and they'll fall to the ground. You release it, and it falls. Gravity catches hold of it, and it falls most often 32 feet per second, correct?
Yeah.
Regardless of its weight, it's still 32 feet per second. And the more weight there is, the bigger kaboom it makes when it hits the ground, but it only falls 32 feet per second, because that gravity supposedly is a constant. Now, you can take a very small magnet, not a big magnet, a little magnet, and you can touch it to the metal ring, let's say if it's of some magnetic pull of the metal ring of an iron base that would be magnetic, that would touch those key rings, and that magnet can by itself overcome gravity.
That means if you let it go, it would not drop?
Correct. You'd hold on to the magnet, but the magnet can overcome gravity.
So it would hold the keys floating?
That is correct. Now, that's from an upside coming down. Let's turn around the other way. Let's say you have a handful of staples. You know what staples are.
Yeah.
And you put them on a table, and you take a magnet, and you just sort of move it over. It will actually cause something at rest to lift off the earth. You have the entire world, the whole gravitational world, pushing down on those staples. And this one very small electromagnetic field. It has to be an electromagnet. It just can be a regular magnetized magnet. And those staples will jump up off the table and climb against gravity to create its balance of that field. And that didn't used to be the case. It used to take a very strong magnet to make that feat real.
Then you would have the magnet underneath the glass tabletop or something in the staples.
No, you could just hold it above it and it'll jump up to the magnet.
The staples will. The staples will. Yeah, but that's just normal magnetic stuff.
No. It used to take a very large magnet.
Oh, I see.
Remember in the radio days when you had to clear a tape, they had those great big electromagnets. They were huge. They weighed about 20 pounds. And you picked it up and you pushed the button, and electrical current went through it to zap the tape. So it would erase it and you could use it again. Now they do that with a pen light. What we're saying is that the electromagnetic field is the same, but gravity is being dispersed and becoming less, weaker. Now, that has something to do with why your polar tilt is adjusting a bit. But see, it's because gravity is getting weaker. Gravity itself is becoming not as powerful as it was.
And magnetism is a separate property?
It is a separate property.
But it does react to gravity. They communicate, maybe, you could say. So, okay, but there's a change going on in the magnetic core of the Earth. Is it related to this weakening gravity?
It is, but that's not why. That's like you have a runny nose. That's not why you have a cold. Mm. That's just a symptom of it. Good analogy, if there is such a thing. So it is also a grounding condition. There you go. It's a condition that even your scientists are scrambling to disprove even now, and they're not doing very well at it because they can't explain it. They don't understand it, so they can't explain the change.
Yeah, you say it's a grounding condition. You mean magnetism or gravity or both?
Gravity. And what that the symptom is, it appears that the electromagnetic field is becoming stronger. It's not. It's constant. What's getting weaker is gravity, gravitational pull. That's why SETI is having great, great, great success, if that's what you want to call it, with their wavelength capacitors of pulse, magnetic waves of fields of signal is going further than ever, ever, ever before.
Those are instruments of measuring? Or no, pulsing. They're pulsing wavelengths.
Sending out messages trying to get an answer back.
Yeah.
They're sending out trying to find another world that can talk back.
And they're finding they can accomplish more with less.
Yeah, they can go into other galaxies now.
Because
before they couldn't, and their instrumentation hasn't changed. They hadn't paid for their last satellite dishes. How can they get bigger, better, fancier ones when they hadn't paid for the ones from the 60s? And yet those same ones from the 60s, with very little attunement, they're seeing almost a quasar-type pulse that is unbeknownst to them.
They are creating a quasar-like pulse.
They are amazed that their signal that would only go this far now is all of a sudden going way, 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 way far.
When did this start changing?
3 years.
Just 3 years?
15 days ago.
3 years, 6 months, and 15 days.
And 28 minutes.
28 minutes.
Oh. That's just the beginning place. Now, what's your next question? Because we've got a long way to go to get you where you want to go.
Right. So the sighted culture's gravity is changing due to the tactile culture's new interactive co-creation universe aligning with us.
Yes. Do you know what that's happening? People, cultures, are becoming heavier in the weight of their body. All cultures. They're gaining weight. They're becoming heavier. Do you know why?
To retrieve the sense of downpull that the old gravity created.
To achieve a state of groundedness.
Yes.
They are no longer grounded. You look at the average, if you want to take, you'll have to prove your own statistics and then science can disprove it. But in the 50s, a normal female that was 5'2 or ever what height they are, the normal average weight was like 125 pounds. And now your average American, I guess it would be now that'd be a size 5, and now the average is a size 12, and they're 180 pounds. They're much more in a size 16 than they are in a size 2.
Some other medium told me this, that the reason, I don't know, it might have been the evergreens, the obesity factor is due to people wanting to be grounded.
That's correct, because they're getting lighter. They add weight for the same feeling of groundedness.
So they're trying to retrieve an old feeling. Is it advisable to explain to them why they have that desire to get the old thing and maybe perhaps adjust, have the universe adjust to them?
They don't see it as a problem, Bob.
Well, you can't argue that. If they don't think it's a problem, I think it's a problem. I wouldn't want to carry around that much weight.
But you don't have any problem being grounded, and if you were to leave the ground, that'd be perfectly fine with
you. Okay, so it's not
if you floated to the beach, it'd suit you good. Others, it would be a white-knuckle flight.
Is there a psychological type that has a problem with floating?
No.
It's just individual.
It's individual. It's that rod and cone thing. It's what they see. It's how they see it.
Yeah, but can we look into their youthful conditioning or whatever happened to them? Is there a way to release them from that? Is it a neurosis?
No. It's not a neurosis. It's normal. And they're soon going to come and start talking about you that you're sickly because you need to put on some weight.
Yeah.
And convince you that you're unhealthy and that that glass of red wine will be the death of you, so go ahead. On and on and on. You know, waxes and wanes, and we're just being cheeky now.
Yeah,
but the point is, they're saying that that's normal and that you're abnormal. So I guess we need to figure out what neurosis is going on with you to get you back to a place where you can get healthy. And you go, wait a second, I'm already healthy. That's not my place. I'm already grounded. No, Bob, you're way too thin. You can see your ribs, you know, and you got your 6-pack down. You need a 12-pack. You need to get yourself back in a place where you can feel good. Because if you had a little more body fat on you, you'd have an easier reaction time. You wouldn't be so sluggish because you're just like a sack of bones. We can have that conversation, and you're going, no, ain't none of me. Well, that's the same conversation they'd have with you. It's like, no, I'm good. You didn't think I was going to get out of that one, did you?
No, I knew you'd get out of that one.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Okay, what's your next question?
We know the thinning of the veil is the hidden factor in the change in matter and factors like gravity, right? That's the deeper cause.
The answer is yes, no question. But we would have to qualify that by saying not for everyone. The veil is thinning, but not for everyone.
Okay.
The marvelous creator, just like the grounding aspect, is in the eye of the beholder. Maybe you just need to cut off the eye business. That seems to be all your issues.
Yeah, the eye. That's what Jim Morrison said 40 years ago. Everybody go blind.
And yet, if you look at the society as a whole, you couldn't really bolster them as sighted.
No, they have become blind. They've turned to stone. No, they have become. And
They have. And that's very interesting. You've got us there. Very good. Okay, what's your next question?
The thinning of the veil is not happening for everybody, but Ion's message is that the veil has been thinned for those that want to experience the thin veil. It's like the access, the opportunity to experience it is easier now.
Yeah.
That's the change.
Beforehand, you could never. It would be so presumptuous of you to have the cognitive idea that you would force the universe to align with you.
Yeah, that would be presumptuous and rude.
And now it's become the meme of the day.
Now, we know the technology, communication structure, as McClune pointed out, facilitated that change.
Oh? So
we could say that the thinning of the veil, a proof of that was the manifestation of television and then the digital technology, that the transparency, the non-bookishness that the electric media brought in could be an expression of the deeper changing of the veil. That's the chicken and an egg. There's this physicist, Jack Sarfati, he talks about matter influencing.
Yeah, so what's your question?
Well, it from bit and bit from it. It's a chicken and egg, both participate. It's not either the chicken or the egg, both are involved.
Right, so what's your question?
So the blinding of people has has caused the heavens to dance for joy because they can't rely on their eyes anymore.
That's
good. That's useful.
What's your question? Come on, we'll get you.
The visual vectors of measurement was circulated around the icon of gravity. So gravity really gets emphasized in the sighted cultures. Now gravity as a concept and as a physical fact lessens because we're moving beyond the sighted culture, which...
It, like the veil, is thinning.
Yes, and that's because we're moving out of the sightedness, and gravity is a sighted metaphor, this down pull.
Well, it's the force that keeps you on the planet.
Right, so as we are...
It's the planet in the right revolution around the sun.
But now we can... That's right, but we can float more, and so gravity becomes, it was the all-encompassing force, like the assembly line, the industrial
culture. It was what Newton used to prove, and they couldn't disprove it, so therefore it was. Well, now they're having issue because it's taking less fuel to go into the stratosphere than it used to.
So they're starting to get inklings of disproving Newton. But,
and the engines haven't changed.
The point is that the monolithic effect of gravity in the post-I cultures decentralizes, it fragments gravity, so it doesn't have a monolithic downpull. It's weakened. It's not true across the board. It's
correct, and that's where your physicists started having trouble because they couldn't explain it, and they didn't know why it was, and they couldn't disprove it, where they weren't going to have it. That's when they invented what you call the string theory.
String theory, and do you know how to summarize what they're saying in string theory?
Sure. The string, it is that you have any world or dimension, and they call five dimensions, which has actually led to the sixth dimension. With the string theory, it allows those to go in and out. Here's how they would draw it out on a piece of paper. You take a step, and then you have a that go which direction. And then when you take that direction, you change it. Like if you were on a diagram of a linear path and you to turn right, then the line turns right. And then you turn left, and then you go back straight. And then you turn around all the way and go back the way you were. That linear projection is a string theory that everything has a causal reaction based on your place and your path of your linear trajectory.
That sounds like an awareness of interactivity going on that sighted cultures didn't have as strong.
Indeed, and that is also activates the duality aspect. But now your quantum physicists didn't like that because they would have to embrace that there were multi-dimensions. And every dimension just became another dimension. And if you have another choice and that's another dimension, then the dimensions get so much that you can't explain anything. And then they got these board fulls of equations for what you call your Hawking's theory of everything that won't work. And the reason that it won't work is because there are actually nine dimensions that would allow you to come into the equation, a working equation that would work. But then you have the application in a human, which would make the 10th dimension. Then you bring the string theory back in, like a string on a violin. Different notes are created, different wavelengths are created of the sound that it is, and those different dimensions can be a different key, and those timing of how they're struck would have a different resonance or vibration, and as that comes into this place, now you end up with 11 dimensions. And in the 11 dimensions, your formulas from the string theorists start working, and then your quantum physicists start having it to apply that you can actually even explain the Big Bang theory, which they haven't been able to prove yet.
I've heard of the 11-dimensional aspect of string theory. So you're
laying... and your quantum physicists, which they thought about this forever. But now all of a sudden, when they calculate that everything does not go into a black hole, that's the difference. That the proton and electron... The proton being the cover, as it goes into a black hole, the energy off of that does not go into the vortex of the black hole. It stays on the outside, and that's what causes that implosion when a star explodes, causing a quasar, causing a implosion as the black hole goes away or dissipates. Everything is not pulled into it. Well, when everything is not pulled into it, see, that undoes gravity in totality. where you lose gravity altogether because it's not related to gravity. Gravity is the running nose of the cold. It's not what's going on. What's going on is you have interaction with matter, antimatter, through protons and ions, and we're talking about a trillionth of a millimeter. So you're talking about the space of the distance between one that would be so tiny would be a one with 20 zeros behind it in nanomillimeters. Now, these dimensions that are have to then be validated that these interim parallel worlds are, and they're very close. You can create a star now on this planet.
That means make a huge sun right here in a laboratory.
That is correct. You can make a sun right here in this planet. That's right.
Because
an entire universe can fit on the tip of a pencil.
With the technology or?
No, technology is just what they use to disprove it, Bob. Technology doesn't help them. Technology confuses them.
You mean I can create it?
You did.
He did. Yeah,
you are. You do.
Yeah, I'm a little universe.
Yes, and then you create a little universe and put it in a matchbox and put the matchbox in your pocket. You see? So because you get it tangled up that you think a universe has to be huge. Well, that's all relative. You've never even been in your oceans all the way to know. How in the world can you even say the ocean is huge when you haven't even seen it, when it could be very, 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 very small? You could have an entire ecosystem in a petri dish.
Yes, but you're bringing up the smallness of these examples, and that is everybody's experience with their little iPhone.
Yes, that is correct. But the dynamic of how this is all being, they haven't been able to disprove these multi-dimensions, parallel universes, parallel worlds. Now, there are those scientists that are working feverishly trying to embrace it with their confabs of lines and grids. And
well, what are they trying to embrace?
That there are multi-dimensions.
Oh, okay.
And they can't disprove that they're not. Their formulas don't work unless they give significant credence to multi-dimensions. Let's simplify it so Joe the plumber can get it. You're walking down the street, you're in New York City, and you bump into somebody. And that bumping into somebody causes a whole reaction within the world as we know it. Okay? You bump into them, they spill the coffee goes in the drain, it hits the light socket, it blows the grid for the whole East Coast.
Yeah.
Or causes somebody who's watching you bump into them and you have a little skirmish and the truck runs into something and blows up the bridge. Or these different chains. Those chains have to have capacity to be experienced in parallel worlds that are next to, inside of, very similar to, very different. But these different dimensions, these different universes, have their own set of physics, of the laws of physics. They vary.
You were saying they have to be something changed. I didn't understand why you
said they have to be parallel, so close that you could step into one into another instantaneously.
And if you step into another, you may, from this world's perspective, become one inch high, so to speak, or even smaller. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, chi, yeah.
Chi?
Chi.
C-H-I, the...
Yeah, chi.
Yeah. Chi. Chi is...
Qigong.
What's chi? Is that the medium for getting to the small world? Or?
No, that's the energy source that's in you. But the Chinese say is your life force. And the life force is what we're talking about here, isn't it?
The life force doesn't have any frames. It moves through worlds or something.
Well, but your body moves through worlds. But your qi, the energy level that's around you, your qigong of grounding, brings you into a place of perfect, ambiguous balance. If you balance your qi, your energy flow and field is balanced. Therefore, with a balanced chi, you much. That's why we sometimes say meditation is a wonderful way to quiet your mind, that you can then have capacity to experience other realities.
Yeah.
If you're cluttered with it, you see, if you've got all these rules and all these problems and all this stuff, then lowering your chi will allow you very simply to brush your hand and put out a candle and raise your little finger and light the candle without a match.
You're saying that relaxing your mind is lowering your chi?
Yes, grounding your chi, qi gong.
But if you were balanced, you'd want to have your chi really high.
You can raise it. You do it just the other way. That's exactly correct. You raise your chi through a stretching exercise where you make your arms like into the sun to raise your chi, and then you put your hands together like you're making a, like you're going to pray.
Yeah.
Then you lower it down to your hara, the middle part of your lower butt, that whole area, to then bring back the flow of balance. Because if you get too high up, you see, you kind of lose it from the outer perspective, and it doesn't focus. If you ground it too low, then you become what they call malaised or blue. The cares of life bring you down. So the balance of the chi is what you're trying to achieve from that world of the Chinese understanding of the chakras and that whole world. That's Chinese 101, good medicine.
They're a tactile culture.
Indeed, and it's very wonderful because they can, with a pair of hands, do more than all your chemotherapy put together.
But how does this relate to gravity and the multi-worlds and the 11 dimensions? Why did you bring in the chi?
You did. We didn't.
Oh, I didn't mention the word chi. You brought it up, but...
You said chai. You were talking about the chai. That's why we discussed it at all.
Okay, well, I'm not aware that I brought it. We're talking about the nine worlds.
You wouldn't have mentioned it other or corrected the way you said it if you hadn't said it to start with.
Well, I thought you said chi.
No, you said chai.
Yeah.
And we said chi.
Yeah, okay.
That's how we got to chi, is you brought it up. So if you've got another question, move on.
Well, I had no reason to bring it up. That's why I think you brought it up.
But, well, listen, it's on tape, so you can yourself.
I don't know why I would have brought up chi. Okay, we're talking about the nine worlds. You say that there were nine worlds, and then the tenth world is the
human. No. Wait. No. I'm not saying there are nine worlds. I'm saying there are millions of worlds.
Yeah.
They can only make their hypothesized equation working it out with 11 worlds.
To make it work, they limit it to 11 or expand to 11.
But limit. They don't limit. They think 11 worlds is over the top. They couldn't even really wrap around that there was one world, let alone two worlds or one parallel universe, all the way through your nine different gates, all the way into that affecting the human, which gives you the 10th, then even having the tactility within that expiration, and that is expiration because their theories are expiring quickly. They work it into 11, which makes the string theorist happy and also makes the Hawkins crowd happy,
right?
Because the equation then works. The vibration spans from the string side and have a causal effect on your individual world that has an effect that you can step into other dimensions and other worlds, which happens all the time, all day, every day. And those are the ones that are missing. We've had this conversation.
Yeah.
Ships go away and come back, and they say it's this and they say it's that. It's amazing how they come up with trying to give reasons that they're looking for everything that they need to explain. But you got to be able to explain everything, or you can't show someone the science. And if you can't show someone the science, therefore it is not. Even though human individual creators kind of get a feel for this and know this already, get a real good shaman in a tribe that's running its world, and you're not going to convince him. He already knows. That knowing is an activation of power, or chi, if that's what you want to call it. That's a good use for it. We'll try to validate the point. The chi of the balance of that sifting through your mind, once you know something, it doesn't matter what the quantum physicists come. come up with next, because they haven't figured out the last thing that they didn't come up with. So how are they going to know when the next thing that comes along that they're trying for the equation for everything?
Okay, I see these quantum physicists as sort of like the obese people, the type of person who needs to be grounded. They need to fit their concepts into what they think reality is limited to. They're a certain kind of mind, a certain kind of personality, and we're not subject to them anymore.
They're doing a wonderful job, though, because what they're doing now, they're writing down a piece of paper and showing the science, indeed, eternally, once and for all, that there are, indeed, scientific evidence proving that there are parallel worlds.
How did they come up with that? That's interesting. What kind of evidence did they find to make them say?
In a black hole. What goes in a black hole, everything that comes to a black hole, even the sun, the stars, the moons, the universe is all sucked into the black hole. It's over. If you get close to a black hole, it's done. It could pluck the moon right out of your orbital rotation and it'd be gone and get the world too if it would fit. But now what they've figured out or calculated or proven is that all of the protons, the positive sides of the nucleus of an atom, only the negative is sucked into the black hole. The positive stays in the periphery outer edge, which is when that becomes in a balance, when they increase, that's what closes a black hole.
When they increase
the protons in the outer loop of the not vacuumed black hole.
Well, how do they prove this? Do they create a little black hole in their CERN labs?
They do. They do.
I see. They make these little black holes. I don't know why someone...
South Korea.
No, I don't know why they came up with the concept of black hole, why they needed it. I think Hawking was one of the early people thinking about black holes.
But he was.
Why are you mentioning South Korea?
That's where they proved it.
Oh, okay.
The machine that made it.
Is this in the science journals or a secret?
It is. Oh, no, sorry. Wait. It will be.
Okay, all right. They've proven that the proton stays on the rim and doesn't get sucked in to the black hole.
Correct. And see, that works great, and it almost explains the Big Bang, but not exactly. But if you bring in the string theory and marry that together, then all of a sudden you realize that a new universe could be created instantaneously, because the string theory allows the different vibrational flow with the formulation of your documentation proving gravity, or that it's lessening or greater than or equal to, with the electrons, remember the protons and the neutrons,
yeah,
and the ions and the neutrinos that are done, and what would gobble up a star, or what would create a universe from the creation of a star like your sun? How does that star keep feeding itself with the energy? The same way with that flow of the positive and negative in that circulatory, never stops. They will, they say, finally burn out, but that they haven't proven that one yet, but they have seen others that have. It's such an old picture. It's in black and white, and nobody wants to watch that anymore. But they're just trying to wrap around the science of what they've already suspected and what the, not the quantum physicists, but the old-timey psychics. Edgar Cayce could barely read and write, and he was speaking high-minded words to this end a long time ago. Homer did the same thing. He was recording all kinds of fun stuff outside of himself for his place of knowing. But see, that's not scientific. That becomes mythology. Basically, the physicists of the world are now, for the first time ever, coming into a very, 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 very close place of validating that there are indeed parallel worlds, that there are indeed forces much more significant than what you call gravity.
And the South Koreans, their work is what's going to be announced soon. Well, it was done in their lab.
Yes.
Who gets to say what it is another factor. It may not be South Koreans.
Well, no. It's where it is.
Are they South Korean scientists, or maybe they're...
Nope, they are South Korean scientists.
And their lab is not the only lab that can create a little black hole.
It's the only one so far.
Was it known that their lab can create a black hole?
Yes. Not on Lou Dobbs, but in the world that would deal with those dynamics.
Among the specialists in that field, they know.
Among the enlightened ones. The CERN crowd. Aren't you going to ask about that?
Yeah, I'm going to. Well, here's the question. Is the old German Nazi scientists, the Wernher von Braun network, are they inputting into CERN? Since they know a lot from the first part of the 20th century, are they inputting into CERN?
Ask and answered.
You said yes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, they are alive and well and thriving. They are thriving. They are in the midst of absolutely having the first basal note of understanding with antimatter. And that high-speed collider, which is only producing, oh my gosh, just nanoids, bits of what you call antimatter. It's the building block that we'll use to prove that the individual creator, humans, have more power in their physical bodiness to run all of Los Angeles. And that tiny bit, the tiny bit, is more powerful than the whole.
So they discover those other worlds, and the scientists and their technology did that, but they would have to look at maybe the insight that we don't need this technology to go into these other worlds.
Well, but they got to prove it, see, that's the issue. And we're not pushing against it all, because we already know, so it's okay, we're good. But some people like the science that goes along with this concept, the very idea, that they would say, well, that's a bunch of hooey. Well, okay, it might be a bunch of hooey, but they have the same problem with Einstein. So if the science can pick up on it and we are pushing against it, well, we don't push against anything. We're now giving them credit for validating their own beginning places of knowing. Vis-a-vis the asking of questions. And if they can find a laudable answer, then science has, quote-unquote, proved it. And if they can't, and it becomes an anomaly, then it is. Show me the science.
Did you just say if they can't prove it, then it is?
Correct. If they can't disprove that there are parallel universes, then they are.
But they're starting to notice that they have proof that shows there are.
That is exactly correct. So it validates it, and that's a fun place, because then your means, well, look at your TV body. That's a fun place. TV body, that's old hat. Jumping from world to world, that's no big deal. Look at your chip body. Your chip body understands it. Well, if I can't work it out this way, I'll work it out that way. And the next thing you know, they've made a radical change in their whole creation, and they recreate themselves.
What world are the physics studying, since there's so many different worlds interpenetrating?
Okay, there we go. They are dividing it up within 10 parallel paradigms, parallel worlds. They are the basic directions that a human can take. That's what it's limited to. Now, please know we're giving you the simplest version of this. They're giving each parallel universe are the 10 directions. They used to do this with 5, and that's so fun because it's like your 5 bodies. They used to do it with 5, but it didn't work. They'd do the equation, and it wouldn't work. It's like your time. It didn't compute. You couldn't make it come out even.
Right.
It wasn't divisible by itself. Well, everything's divisible by itself. Well, no, these aren't. Wait. If it's divisible by 1 and itself, then it's a type of number. But it doesn't necessarily qualify because it doesn't necessarily have the rules and the laws between the 9 primary, the extra where it affects the 5-bodied individual, because you see everybody has 5 bodies. So do the string theorists.
But they also had 5 more?
Well, no. They had to embrace it with the quantum physicists that were trying to make the equations work. They blended them, basically. Instead of becoming their differences of you're right and I'm wrong and I'm right and you're wrong, neither equation was working. Once they came together, all of a sudden everybody started dancing because they, for the first time, could actually vindicate, validate, and prove that the Big Bang took place and how it took place, and that that individual place of creation can solve every question that any physicist would have regarding energy, oxygen, flows of gravity, electromagnetic fields, pulses, quasars, nanotechnology. It goes on and on and on and on, and on because it all works then. Because if you have a law, it doesn't work in this realm or world or reality, then all you have to do is you have the ability and capacity to recognize that they are, just like when we started with you, when you were trying to rift, and you thought we'd lost our minds and thought it was kind of fun, but then all of a sudden you started doing it, and now you want to know how to do it more and remember what you did. We're no longer deciding whether or not there are worlds to go to. You're figuring out how to get to the next one and remember it.
I'm thinking that these physicists, when they can prove it, then they will talk to the ones who already are living it.
That's typically how it flows. And then they'll go back and
try to disprove it.
Well, but good for them. That's good, because once it is, it is. See, that's the thing. I mean, that's how they built all of the false premises that everybody prays by now. It's from false premises that they couldn't disprove, so therefore, when the apple turns loose from the tree, it falls to the ground, and if it hits you on your head, then you've got a quantum theory.
Let's see what images or more questions that have been coming in.
Okay. There are some machines. One is in Cupertino, California, and this machine gauges extrasensory perception in a wavelength format. And it's been going off the scale for this show. And the question is, how can their machine, isn't it interesting that everything now is questions? This is from Carl Quirtimus in Cupertino, California. And the question is how can he apply this machine wavelength? How can you apply it to proving the parallel universes? Like, if a human being is in this world and he's getting an ESP reading that his machine's picking up on just freely through the air, if it activates and is going crazy, and then that individual human goes to a parallel universe, could he use that to gauge whether or not that human was in this universe or another based on his calculations on his machine? And the answer is yes.
He wants to know if he can measure the effects or riff riding with his machine, and you're saying yes.
From an ESP level, yes.
His machine can pick up, like radionics or something, can pick up vibrations. It's picking up our vibrations, and it's just going off the map, off the meter, right? And you said it's in a wavelength format, was that the word?
Yes. The way the machine's read, it's not like a green light you're in this world and a red light you're in universe 288.
Well, does Carl know what the machine is picking up?
Yes, he invented it.
And he knows about our show, so he started to measure our show, so to speak.
Well, he just knew it hit at 3 o'clock and started going crazy on Tuesdays.
How did he find out where it was coming from?
Doesn't know until yet. He just intended, because he knew his machine was working, that something was going on. And we picked up on what his asking was of what's going on, kind of like your caller from Los Angeles who sent an email saying, I looked everywhere for the show and I couldn't find it. I knew it was on, but I couldn't. What's the station? What's the frequency? Is it on Achieve Radio? Where is it? No. It's in the EASP show. Yeah. Where do I find it? I knew it was on. I knew I was missing it. Same thing. You know, you see, he didn't get the disconnect because he had to listen to it. But he knew it was on. He felt that it was on. He felt the vibration of it. But he was asking the question of, how do I tap into this? What's the station? What's the frequency? What's the node? What's the URL to get to here?
Is Carl's machine picking up the yes answer from ION?
Yes.
And he knows it means yes?
Yes. He knows it means yes. He'll away with this, and when he can verify yeses as reality, then he can judge what the machine is doing for an affirmative answer.
Does this machine pick up ESP in other situations?
Yes.
Yeah, and he can use it for that, but it's like he's never got such a dose of ESP from his machine's perspective as this show is creating.
Correct, that's right. And see, here's the thing. Nobody's pushing against extrasensory perception. Isn't that interesting? Nobody says that's a bunch of hooey. Now, some say, it doesn't happen to me, or if it happens to me, I can't remember, or I don't know how this works, or, you know, they may not have their chi in a place to sieve it, okay? But they don't say it doesn't exist.
That's right.
They don't say it's witchery or soothsaying or foolishness.
You know, the literate cultures, the eye cultures found that hard to believe, but when you have transmissions picking up radio and television, it's like ESP. The communication situation the humans are living in makes the experience of ESP, the idea of it, more palatable.
It becomes a frequency, and until you understood that there was indeed a frequency, you certainly couldn't embrace that the frequency was affecting you. That's what happened to your Rayland business. That effect, causal effect.
Yeah, she was getting the effect, but had to conceptualize it coming from somewhere else.
Correct.
Something like that. But the thing is, you can see the flat space of the book from 1600 to 1900 created a thickness and not a sensitivity to acoustic or tactile frequency. You know what I mean? You can just see it. That's why it was a dark age from 1600.
That's why War and Peace was such a long novel.
Because people had time and thickness.
There was no war and there was no peace. And when there was no peace, there was no war. And it became a very protracted discussion after a bit because of the tactility, the touching part of no war, no peace, no peace, no war.
It was a strange thing to communicate to literate cultures.
They didn't know they were in peace until they had to come off the heels of war. They didn't know they had war until they came off the heels of peace.
It was a slower perception back then, a thicker perception.
It's speeding right up.
Paul Hammond in Boise, outside Boise, was asking about how the gravity is affecting his potatoes. Is there an answer we want to give him?
Yes, there is. He needs more nitrogen, more potash. Really has nothing to do with what we're talking about. What's happening is that the fields have not been allowed to lay fallow. And if we were in your building place of working, we would rotate your crops. Throw it in peas or some legume that would be very high nitrogen-based and allow it to lay fallow. You've been doing it through the growing seasons using clover and rye cover, but just through the snowy time, you know, the cold weather, whatever. But that's not quite effective now because the leaching that's coming, it's from your potato slips are kind of mutated because, as you well know, you make French fries. French fries and potatoes are different than baking potatoes. So the genetic inclination that makes the perfect French fry is draining your soil base. So you just need to increase potash, nitrogen, and if you can, rotate your crops a bit, and won't notice the lack of harvest because of the increase of production. And you're going to get this, what you call a black fungus, which would rot the potatoes. If you continue on this path, your yield will be diminished significantly. But if you can rotate the crop out, you kind of eliminate that possibility because the extra nitrogen and potash will raise it up so that the soil becomes a little bit more acidic and it'll kill off this blight of the same thing that was parallel to your potato famine.
Yeah, he just, for some reason, was bringing the concept of gravity into it because he could hear us talking about gravity, so he wondered if that was an issue.
Yes, and it's a big deal because we talked about it like it was nothingness, but it meant everything to him.
So Tom somebody was the next situation.
Yes, Quicksilver.
Tom Quicksilver?
No. Tom, it will not give his last name.
Okay.
It begins with a T.
Where is he?
He will won't say,
okay.
But we'll out him. He is in Dearborn, Michigan, outside of Detroit.
Now, what's his question?
His question is, how does this change in the electromagnetic grid affect gravity?
Okay, were we talking about the change? We were talking about a change in the magnetism? No, in gravity, but he's calling it the electromagnetic grid?
Field, uh-huh.
Is that what we're talking about?
Well, it is a field. It's a grid, but it is a field. Because, see, you have north and south on a battery, north and south on a magnet. Well, that is a field, northern or southern.
We were talking about gravity's changing.
Yes, but he's asking if that electromagnetic grid or field has an effect on gravity.
Oh, okay, that's the question.
That's a redefined question, and the answer is gravity is becoming weaker, and that will show up as an increased electromagnetic field increase. For example, if you have a magnet in your speaker of your radio, you'll notice your radio seems to be playing louder with the same size battery. You know, the current that goes through when they're wrapping the coils, you'll have to adjust your volume a little lower because the decrease of gravity will seem as though the electromagnetic field has increased. Now, the sensitive ones, we're talking about humans, there are those that are sensitive. They're going to come in with a new flight, almost from what you call, it'll be a type of migraine. The change of that pulsed field will give pressure in the frontal lobe.
It makes it seem the electromagnetic field is increasing, but it isn't.
But the sensitive ones will have that as their manifestation.
Did you say a headache?
Like a migraine or a sick headache in the front of your head. They're getting very sensitive to that.
Do you have any more?
Paula Ewing, she is from America, but she moved to Half Moon Cay. It's in Ocho Rios, Jamaica. She is a botanist.
Botanist?
We're saying biologist, but it's botanist. She corrected us. And she's down there on a grant studying the effects of bush, the tropicalness. Tropicality, like rainforesty kind of situation.
Yeah.
And she's noticing a difference in the waxing and waning of the flora and fauna. That has to do with gravity as well.
Does she know that?
Well, that's her question.
Yeah.
She's looking for a reason of why the trees aren't growing high as they used to. Well, actually, they are growing higher but thinner. But when they're thinner, as you have winds, which in that geographic area, winds is not too big, too unnormal, the thinner tree is not grounded as well. It's more easily blown over. Therefore, it appears that the trees aren't growing as high.
And because it's blown over?
Yeah, if the tree blows over, you don't have old growth trees to see how high they'll grow.
Okay, when a tree is blown over, it's knocked over, lies flat in the ground. It's been ruined.
It's no longer growing.
It's broken.
Correct. And
so,
that will only, the old growth trees can withstand anything. But now that gravity is changing, the trees aren't grounded as well. So therefore, the thinner trees, because they would be newer, are easily blown over. So therefore, the trees will give the appearance from an evolutionary process that the trees aren't growing as tall as they used to.
They look like they're not growing, or they're not growing as tall?
They're not growing.
Yeah.
They won't grow as high because they'll be blown over if they do.
They start to protect themselves.
It's an evolutionary process.
Yeah, trees now don't grow as high. Okay.
It's more difficult for a tree to ground itself.
Okay, so she was asking if gravity is a factor here, and you're saying yes.
Yes.
So now she knows it's not caused by the ozone thinning or global warming. She knows it's caused by the gravity.
The weakening of the gravitational field. And I don't know if weakening is the best word. Your words were better before, of the different centralized...
Decentralizing gravity.
Right, decentralizing gravity. That's probably a more scientific way, binomial nomenclature to embrace it. We went with the softer one that the average bear could hopefully embrace a little easier. But your words probably were more causally effective in the platitude of answering your question.
Yeah, because reality was a uniform page. Now there's so many holes in the pages, which can become awareness of portals. And the pages are becoming multi-leveled, like Finnegan's Wake. That's what's happening.
That's exactly correct,
yeah.
Bob.
Yeah.
And they can't disprove it, so it is.
And when they disprove it, which they won't be able to, but if they did, then it wouldn't be, or it would be still, but we would go around schizophrenically denying it because it was official policy, right?
You'd have, that's right, because you'd have the theory for everything. And look what they did with the theory of relativity. All that meant was that everything was relative.
Yeah.
Kudos to Einstein.
For starting it?
For giving us all this delicious contrast.
Okay, well, then I am complete, and that is the end of Melting Titanium for August 25th, 2009. Thank you, Ion.
Hooray. Thank you. We are, as always, delighted.